What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Shop Blinds.com Labor Day Mega Sale, happening now. Save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free measure. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Tito's Handmade Vodka is America's favorite vodka for a reason. From the first legal distillery in Texas, Tito's is six times distilled till it's just right, and naturally gluten-free, making it a high-quality spirit that mixes with just about anything, from the smoothest martinis to the best Bloody Marys. Tito's is known for giving back, teaming up with nonprofits to serve its communities and do good for dogs. Make your next cocktail with Tito's. Distilled and bottled by Fifth Generation Inc., Austin, Texas. 40% alcohol by volume. Savor responsibly.
What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Welcome in to episode 540 of Rico Bronya. Let me start off by asking everybody a question, very simple question, as we recap the Mets losing 3 out of 4 to the Miami Marlins. Are you surprised? Are you surprised? Are you surprised? Are you surprised? Is anybody truly surprised that a team that over the last, I mean, we're talking about 2.5 months, for 2.5 months, they have been a bad baseball team. Are we surprised that after they flex their muscle against the Philadelphia Phillies and sweep them, are we surprised they reverted back to the team that they have mostly been? You can't be surprised. It's typical. It's frustrating. And let me say something with no smile on my face, with no smirk on my face. Again, the division is over. And I took a lot of shrapnel from my fellow Met fan when I said, even if the Mets swept the Philadelphia Phillies, I still would feel like they're not winning the National League East. And this is why. as well as they played against Philly, as great as it was sticking it up there, you know what's, you kind of knew in the back of your mind, this could pop up again. And when I say this, what do I mean? Is it the horrible starting pitching that can't get through five innings? Is it giving up a cavalcade of runs in the first inning and falling out of a game early? Or is it the garbage defense that we watched this team play over four games? Or, and I know it's tough to pick on the offense, as I've said numerous times, is it the fact that they ended the series over the final two games going a combined, let me do the math, 2-for-19 with runners in scoring position? You can take your pick. Because the team we have been forced to watch since the middle of June that has been bad reverted its ugly head in a four-game monstrosity against the Miami Marlins. Now, before we get into game three, we get into game four, we break down the future of this rotation because I think Carlos Mendoza opened the door to Kodai Senga being demoted. Let's just do a little State of the Union reality check. We are about to enter the month of September. The Mets are going to play their first game in September on Monday afternoon against the Detroit Tigers. It is now nut-crunching time. The state of the standings is that the NL East is over, which we knew, and they're still in a great spot to at least secure a postseason spot. And a lot of that is thanks to the Reds. The Reds crapped the bed for the month. You know, we could talk about how bad of an August the Mets had, and it was not good. 11-17 is a bad month. How'd Cincinnati do? They were 12-15. So the Reds had a great opportunity to make up a lot of ground. They have struggled. They just snapped the losing streak with their victory on Sunday against St. Louis. So thanks to the mediocrity of the rest of the National League, the Mets are still in a great spot to make the postseason. And I'll tell you something sort of positive before we get into the meat and potatoes of this whole thing. I think they're going to make the playoffs comfortably. Like, I know they go to Cincinnati next weekend. We'll get into it. And by the way, it's not just the Reds anymore because the Giants are only a game behind Cincinnati. Now, the good news is the Mets have the tiebreaker on San Francisco, so it's actually a bigger deficit for the Giants. But my kind of brain tells me that while I don't think the Mets are going to have a monster September, I think we're actually going to have a very boring standing September because they're not winning the NL East, nor are they in a pennant race. And I think they should comfortably secure a postseason spot. And we could all argue amongst ourselves how important it is to be wild card number two versus wild card number three. Dare I say wild card number one, which would be important. I don't think they're going to really be in contention for that. So I do think as we enter the final month, you're going to hear a lot, I know from me and a lot from others of, you know what, just get to the tournament, get hot at the right time. It's a new season and we'll see what happens. And there's truth to that. There is. You know, as bad as things have been for a few months, this is still likely a playoff team, like I said. And when you get to the playoffs, anything can happen. So I guess the next month is going to be us determining who starts in the postseason, who shouldn't start in the postseason, who shouldn't be on the roster in the postseason. Because my math tells me there are 25 games left, and if the Mets are going to have a six-man rotation, that leaves only four starts per guy. There isn't a lot to kind of view in terms of earning your stripes for the postseason. So I don't think it's crazy, only a handful of starts into his major league career, to say Nolan McClain is the front runner to not only make a postseason start, but be a game one starter. Now let's get to the other guys. And I want to start with David Peterson. It is one thing to have a bad start. It's one thing to have a mediocre start. It happens. Like, even the best of pitchers are going to have their off days, and I understand that, and I accept that. The garbage that we saw on Saturday was unacceptable. And for all of us that want to call David Peterson an ace, or he's close to being an ace, or he's figured it all out, while he has still mostly had a good year, you cannot have that kind of performance in the middle of a pennant race. And it started right from the beginning. And it started because of his miscue. Like I mentioned, the defense was terrible for the course of these four games. It was obvious in game one and two when they made five errors in the first two games. But if you go to Saturday's game, and by the way, just a quick note, if you want to hear more about game one and game two, download episode 539. We cut this series in half. We talked a lot about the game one loss, the game two victory, Mendy going to Luis Torrens to try to close a game out. So if you want more on those games, download episode 539. As far as Saturday's game is concerned, they didn't make an error, but that first inning was a mess. We start with Peterson getting ahead of Xavier Edwards to start the game, gives up a base hit up the middle. Okay, leadoff man on. We know how good David has been in the first inning of starts. He then gets Otto Lopez to hit a comebacker. And Peterson is a sure-handed defensive pitcher. He plays his position really well. If he makes the play and doesn't allow the ball to go off his glove, it's likely a 1-6-3 double play. Boom, two outs, nobody on. And there's a really good chance David Peterson is putting up a zero in the top of the first inning, which he's done a lot of. If he doesn't even attempt to make the play, just lets the ball go past him, it's also likely a double play. It's probably a very easy either 6-3 double play, 6-4-3 double play. Either way, Otto Lopez is bouncing into a double play. But David Peterson gets the glove up. It goes off of his glove. It goes into no man's land, two on, nobody out. Now, that doesn't mean David Peterson has to allow the inning to get out of hand. In fact, he got Augustin Ramirez right after that on a comebacker that he made the play on. So there's second and third, one out, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, you know what, get out of this thing down 1-0. We have seen this Met offense really crush throughout August. I have confidence. Maybe not they're going to pound Edward Cabrera, but you know what? If it's 1-0, not a big deal. Instead, he gives up a bomb to Hedelberto Hernandez to right field. That Juan Soto, I don't think he was ever going to make that play, but certainly looked confused going back on the ball. Two-run double, it's 2-0. It's still not, or actually 1-0, because remember, Otto Lopez had to tag up on the play. So even the double off the wall turned out to not be the worst thing in the world, because instead of it being 2-0 runner on second, it's second and third, one out. He still has a chance to get through this inning with it being, you know, not a good first inning, but not the end of the world. What does he do? Eric Wagaman rips a double down the right field line. Now it's 3-0. Okay. Deep breath. Deep breath, David Peterson. Here's the thing, man. You get through this inning, it's 3-0. I still have confidence. I still believe the Mets will hit. You have been so good going deep into games. Just get through this inning, have a couple of efficient innings, and you could still make this a 5 1/3 3-run performance, which I know doesn't sound great, but it still keeps your team in play. He walks Connor Norby. Now I'm thinking, oh my God. And by the way, there is some backdrop to this story, which Pete obviously appreciates. David Peterson the other day was unceremoniously released in our fantasy league. And it is the final week of the fantasy baseball regular season. I'm a playoff team. Hoff's a playoff team. I see David Peterson get released. I think I mentioned this briefly on the Rico a few days ago. I got a bid on him. I won the bidding for David Peterson. I outbid who? Who'd I outbid? Hoffman. It was the worst win I've ever gotten because David Peterson is now on the mound, not only for the baseball team I love, but he's proceeding to choke away my division lead by what was going on in this first inning. So, Hoff, I wish you weren't so goddamn cheap and you would have bid more on David Peterson and outbid me, because I would have won the division if it wasn't for claiming this guy.
You bid, we have $400 in our budget, and you bid like $391. I'll just say this. I did bid higher than $150 at first. I go, I'm going to put in $200. But who the hell is going to pick up David Peterson right now? Who needs David Peterson that bad? I don't think anybody. He hasn't pitched that great. This is going to be a great steal. I'll save some money and get David Peterson. And I see you beat me by like you put 391 down.
Yeah, that's true. I bid way too much. And by the way, when you ask yourself who's going to bid on David Peterson, I don't know. The fantasy owner that just locked Zach Wheeler and Nate Eovaldi in 5 days. Probably that guy. But here's the point. As David Peterson is allowing this first inning to get worse, I'm not only suffering as a Met fan, I'm suffering as a fantasy owner who's watching my division league go away because of a guy I claimed 10 minutes earlier. But here's the killer. He gets a huge strikeout of Dane Meyers. And again, he's a pitch away from getting through the first inning down 3-0. And I'm not here to celebrate 3-0, but I at least feel you keep the game reasonably close. You give your offense a chance. And the other thing you allow, and I'm not saying this from a fantasy perspective, but baseball perspective, you could still have a good performance. Like you can save your start. You go through 5 scoreless innings after that, you just had a quality start. So David Peterson, when he was facing Joey Weimer with 2 on and 2 out in the first inning and his pitch count exploding, this was it. Like this was the moment where he could save his start. And what happens? He falls behind 3-0 and then gets lucky because Weimer hits a line drive right at Brandon Nimmo. Okay. All right. This is the break the Mets need. And Brandon Nimmo, and I love you, Nims, first step in, you can see he's in trouble, and the ball goes over his head. So when I talk about bad defense, David Peterson on the comebacker, Brandon Nimmo looking like a floppy fish in left field, those two plays literally were responsible for all 5 runs. If they make those plays, the Marlins don't score a run in the first inning. If they make one of those plays, specifically the Nimmo play, it's 3-0 in the bottom of the first inning. That was a killer. But that's not the only thing that crushed me about David Peterson. Because even after a 37-pitch monstrosity of a first inning, he comes back in the second inning, barely breaks a sweat, pitches a 1-2-3 inning. The Mets got a run back in the first on the Lindor home run. It's 5-1. They get another run back in the second on some Miami bad defense, and it's 5-2. And I don't know about you guys at home, but I'm thinking they're in the game. It's a 5-2 game, and even though Peterson had this horrific first inning, the game is still there if he could settle down. And what does he do to start the third inning? First pitch double, walk, walk, back-to-back singles. The game has been broken open now. It's 8-2. And Mendy's got to take that trot to the mound to take him out without recording it out in the third inning. That was a non-competitive mess by David Peterson. And I'm going to do everybody a favor. Okay, I'm going to do this early, and I don't want to hear any lip from anybody. Oh, no, it's Kodai Senga. It's Tyler Rogers. The net negative is David Peterson. I don't want to hear anything about what he's done the rest of the season, how good he's been. I know he's been good. You cannot have a 2-inning, 8-run, 3-walk performance that was set up by your bad defense. So I'll mention other names later on in the pod, but the net negative is David Peterson. Period. Stop. End of discussion. Now, let's get to this offense because I give this team credit. We're going to crap on the Mets a lot over the course of this Rico Bronya, but I do give them credit for the fight. I mentioned how Lindor hit the leadoff home run in the first inning. Great. Get a run back immediately. They get a run in the second inning after the bad defense by Otto Lopez and the bad defense by Augustin Ramirez, who threw one into center field on the Cedric Mullins stolen base attempt. Would have been nice if Lindor, who had an opportunity to tack on another run, came through, but beggars can't be choosers. It's 5-2. And then Mark Vientos, credit to Mark Vientos, going opposite field, 3-run shot in the third inning. They're down 8-2. They respond immediately to make this thing 8-5. I know we pick on Juan Solo for hitting solo home runs, but it's only the 4th inning, and every run counts. Home run, 8-6. And then, in the bottom of the 6th inning, I thought maybe this is the moment. Juan Soto hits a first pitch. That's right, swung at the first pitch. It's allowed. A first pitch, 2-run home run to tie the game up at 8. If you were at Citi Field or you were watching this game at home, you forgot about David Peterson's existence in that moment. They're down 5-0. They're down 8-2. They come all the way back, and there's still 3 innings to go. And you know that now Carlos Mendoza can use the top end of his bullpen. He used Brooks Raley in the 6th, but now that it's tied, no issue going to Tyler Rogers. No issue being aggressive going to Edwin Diaz. Like, the Mets got amazing work out of Chris Devenski. You couldn't have asked for more. And their offense was able to proceed and reward Devenski's effort by coming back to tie the game. And then you've got Tyler Rogers. And I have defended Tyler Rogers for the soft contact. That was not soft contact in the 7th inning. It was not. The base hit to Ramirez was hit hard. The base hit to Wagerman was a bloop. I'll give him that. But the sacrifice fly by Norby was scorched. I thought it was going over the head of Juan Soto. So Tyler Rogers, let's call it like it is. He's been a disappointment. I don't regret the trade. He's not the problem that Ryan Helsley is. But Tyler Rogers comes in the top of the 7th inning after Soto electrifies Citi Field with what could have been his moment. We've talked so much about Juan Soto's moment, the moment Juan Soto became a Met, blah, 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 blah. It's not his fault, but if they win that game, we're probably looking at Soto's 2-run home run in the 6th inning a little bit differently. And it wasn't his fault. I mean, the guy got on base 5 times. He stole 2 bases. He hit 2 home runs. He did statistical things that don't happen. So I got no qualms with Juan Soto. He had the game of not the game of his life. The guy's a future Hall of Famer. He had a hell of a game. We'll phrase it that way. But Tyler Rogers comes in the 7th inning, and that was a buzzkill. And then the other buzzkill, and I say this a lot, and I shouldn't even preface this. I preface when I rip the Met offense now by saying, hey, they've been great lately. And they have been great lately. And there's no denying it. Look at the month of August. We'll get into some of the stats later. They averaged over 6 runs per game in the month. So the Met offense is finally living up to the optimism I had for them, that some of us had for them. They've also hit with runners in scoring position for the most part. But when Jeff McNeil leads off the bottom of the 7th inning with a triple, what a response. Like, I'm sitting there. I was not at the game Saturday. I'm sitting there on my couch. I'm like, man, this team, they're showing some stones. Every time they're down, they're responding. 5-0 response. 8-2 response. Now, after Tyler Rogers gives up the run in the 7th inning on the sack fly by Connor Norby, they're responding immediately. Jeff McNeil leadoff triple. And then you get the failures. First, Brett Beatty grounds out right at Xavier Edwards. And then you have a decision by Carlos Mendoza that I'm not going to kill the decision. I thought it was an interesting back and forth that I had in my brain and certainly happened in the Mets text chat. And that is, instead of going to Marte to pinch hit for Torrens with a runner on third and less than 2 outs, where you're not looking for a 2-run home run, that would be nice, you're looking for contact. The most important thing with a runner on third and less than 2 outs is contact. Now, obviously, it has to be good contact because Brett Beatty hit a ground ball right at the second baseman. That ain't good enough. So I thought when the catcher spot is a bullet you can only use once in a game as a pinch hitter, as long as you're only carrying 2 catchers, is this the moment to use the bullet when Torrens is actually a pretty good option to drive the run in? Instead, Mendy goes to Marte, and what made this worse is that Starling Marte, who has been playing really well lately, had a non-competitive at-bat. I mean, it was a 3-pitch, easy at-bat for Calvin Fauché. And that was air coming out of the balloon central. Now, Cedric Mullins had a chance to pick him up. He hit the ball hard, hit it right at the left fielder. Inning is over, and essentially, the Mets were done. They had another opportunity in the 8th inning after Soto walked and stole a base, but Pete came up small, Nimmo came up small, and by the time they came up in the 9th inning, Edwin Diaz, in a rare off performance, let the game slip away, giving up multiple extra base hits, giving up 2 runs, a real off performance by Edwin Diaz, who took a one-run game, made it a three-run game, and while we're all sitting there praying that Cedric Mullins could extend the game for Lindor when he came up as the tying run, he struck out. And so it was a real, I said the word buzzkill a few times, but it was a buzzkill. Because you show this great fight, you electrify the crowd numerous times, and really from the Jeff McNeil leadoff triple in the seventh inning on, the Met offense crumbled. The Met offense in the last three innings of this game went 0-for-8 with runners in scoring position. 0-for-8 is not fair. It was 0-for-1, 0-for-2, 0-for-3, 0-for-4, 0-for-5, 0-for-6. There you go. Want to be accurate? From the sixth inning on, really after the Nimmo double that followed the Soto home run, the Mets crumbled with runners in scoring position. They couldn't get that last hit. The bullpen faltered after Chris Devenski did everything he could to keep the game close. And so you walked away from Saturday's loss very disappointed, because now you know you can't win the series. And also what felt like was going to be this awesome win, this incredible win, bailing out David Peterson, who had the offest of days, instead turned into just a disappointing loss. Now, the good news was they had a chance to respond. They had a chance on Sunday afternoon with Kodai Senga on the mound to absolutely erase, to a degree, Saturday, at least get a split out of this series, and we could all feel good about ourselves. And what happened? Well, what happened is we have a Kodai Senga problem. That's what happened. Now, the offense did nothing, so let's get that out of the way early. Sandy Alcantara was in complete control. We've talked about Sandy a lot on the Rico this year as a trade target, how he's gotten better as the season has gone on, and certainly any Met fan who watched Sandy Alcantara on Sunday afternoon at Citi Field comes away from it saying, yeah, I'd like to trade for him in the offseason. We could have a lot of starting pitching. Let's get him. He goes seven innings, and not only does he go seven innings, and you could say this was irresponsible by Clayton McCullough, the Marlins manager, or you could go the other way and say, ah, it's great, great fight. Sandy Alcantara's coming off Tommy John surgery. He didn't pitch last year. He came into this game at 141 innings, which is a ton of innings when you really think about it. Just to put it in perspective, David Peterson, who's been the innings eater of the Mets, is at 150. So in a very similar world in terms of how many innings they've...
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features Swift Rinse Tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
Hmm.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Shop Blinds.com Labor Day Mega Sale, happening now. Save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free measure. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer. Plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
And one guy's coming off Tommy John surgery. And think about it. He was bad early this season. So how many times was he getting knocked out early in games? And yet he's at 141 innings. I was surprised that at 93 pitches through six, McCullough allowed him to start the seventh inning. And of course, that was the inning where the mini brouhaha started with Mark Vientos. But Alcantara was great, and the Met offense did nothing. They had a couple of opportunities. Jeff McNeil had a one-out double in the second. They didn't do anything. They got a Lindor base hit and stolen base, and then Soto hit a ball that on most nights would have gone out for a two-run home run, but Joey Weimer brought it back. And then Alcantara kind of went to work. They had an opportunity in the sixth, and Pete Alonso grounded out. They had an opportunity in the seventh, and Starling Marte struck out off the bench. So they had a couple of chances. It was a lifeless performance by the offense. We could pick on them all day. You score one run, it's very unlikely you're going to win a game.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
But let's get to Senga. Kodai Senga, in the second inning of this game, this is after he gave up the run in the first on the sacrifice fly by Otto Lopez. Kodai Senga had an inning in the second inning in which he looked like Kodai Senga. He struck out three guys in a row. He then proceeded to start the third inning by getting back-to-back groundouts. I bring this up because in the third inning of a game where they're trailing 1-0, Senga has now retired seven in a row. It's a mild accomplishment, but he's retired seven in a row. He struck out the side in the second inning. He got ground outs in the third inning. Owina thinking, all right, he's back. Owina thinking that? Owina thinking, all right, maybe Kodai Senga has figured out whatever ills has befallen him since coming off of the injured list. Well, if you thought that, and I did slightly, Kodai Senga decided to slap us across the face because he followed it up by giving up a rip double to Jacob Marcy and a bomb of a home run to Augustin Ramirez. And that's when you said to yourself, oops, I was wrong. He hasn't figured it out. For whatever reason, and I listen to Kodai after these games through his translator to try to hear what he's telling us. And he tells us that his body feels right, but I can't even describe what he said after the game because I don't understand it. All I know is he's been bad. And this is the first time we've ever seen Kodai Senga be bad. We've seen Kodai Senga maybe not go deep enough into games. We've seen Kodai Senga maybe not pitch enough. We've seen Kodai Senga not pitch on regular rest. And then when he does, he's not successful. We've seen plenty of things that I know anger Met fans, but the one thing we haven't seen until now is him being effective. We haven't seen his ghost fork get so hittable. We haven't seen that. We haven't seen Kodai Senga lack command. We haven't seen that a lot. And now we're seeing it. And while it wasn't as bad as David Peterson, it wasn't good either. Because after he gave up the two-run home run in the third inning, what does he do? He gives up a leadoff double in the fourth, gives up an RBI single, gets through the inning, but now it's 4-0. Mendy allows him to start the fifth only because he's desperate. Because Mendy's like, I don't want to go to my bullpen in the fourth and fifth inning every freaking day. And so what happens? He gives up a double to the ninth place hitter and then a bunt hit to the following hitter. And then eventually Carlos says, I got to get him out of the game. After he walked out of Lopez on four pitches, that was when Mendy said, all right, I know his pitch count's low, but he stinks right now. I got to get him out. And we should give Brandon Waddell 30 seconds of love, because the only difference between Brandon Waddell and Chris Devinsky was that when Devinsky did it, the Met offense said, we'll help you out. When Waddell comes in and pitches 4 1/3 scoreless innings, which is even more than what Devinsky did, the Met offense didn't do anything. So instead of us talking about Waddell being this, you know, unsung hero, it's like an afterthought. But Waddell did do a great job. And the best thing that Waddell and Devinsky did on Saturday and Sunday was that they saved Mendy from having to use even more arms. And luckily, not luckily for Devinsky and Waddell, they do their job and then they get sent away and they get replaced by somebody else. I mean, think about it. Devinsky gives you 3 scoreless innings. You knew it as it was happening. Well, he ain't long for this world. We talked about it on the last Rico. Did we? I'm confused what Rico was. Maybe we didn't, because we didn't have a Rico when Devinsky pitched. No, it was about, who was it about? Oh, it was about Jose Castillo. It was, yeah, Jose Castillo got 6 outs. You see him later. He's gone. Replaced by Devinsky. Replaced by Waddell. And Gary Cohen put out this great stat. Most of the stats they give out are useless, but he gave out a great stat about those pitchers, like the guys who are called up to then be sent out or DFA'd. And we should do an off-season Rico about these guys, the Brandon Waddells of the world, the Jose Castillos, the Chris Devinskys, who've been on this team numerous times. They've done great. Like, honestly, for the most part, those guys have been awesome. And over the last 2 days, both in losses, the fill-in relievers, who then get sent out the next day, did everything they could to keep this team in the game. Now, let me get back to Senga. So, Kodai Senga, 4 2/3 innings, 7 hits, 5 runs, bad performance. And we have seen a Kodai Senga we've never seen before. I was surprised, but maybe I shouldn't be, that after the game, when Carlos Mendoza was asked about Senga, specifically how much longer they can deal with this in a pennant race, instead of Mendy defiantly saying, he'll figure it out, he'll take the ball his next start, he didn't commit to Kodai Senga making another start. He said, we'll talk about it. He did commend Hefner and the crew that they're digging into it. They're trying to figure out what's wrong. And while he still has faith in Kodai Senga, he did not commit him to making another start. And this is one thing I really love about the Mendy Stearns administration. They really do hold people accountable. Guys are sent out, guys are DFA'd, and maybe in the case of Kodai Senga, a guy loses his job because he isn't earning it, because he isn't deserving of staying in the rotation. You have Brandon Sproat, who got jerked around in the bullpen last week. Then they let him make a start the other day. He goes 7 scoreless innings. While he may not have dominated the way that Jonah Tong has, or the way that Nolan McClain had, Brandon Sproat's ready. And Brandon Sproat deserves an opportunity, especially when you look at the rest of this rotation. He does. And Kodai Senga doesn't deserve to be in the rotation anymore. What complicates things about Senga, as compared to Holmes and as compared to Minaya is, what do you do with him? We mentioned recently about Minaya going to the bullpen and how that would be an option. We've talked all year about Clay Holmes going to the bullpen and how that can be an option because Holmes has done it before. Now, I think he's done it in Japan, but is Kodai Senga an option out of the bullpen? Or is this a IL stint? I was going to say phantom IL stint, but I don't want anyone getting in trouble because those are not allowed. Just ask Billy Epler. So if the Mets decide, you know, we can't start this guy every 5-6 days, is it an IL stint? I mean, is that what it is? What do you do? And I'll tell you what I would do. And I'm going to get slapped in the face for this. What I would do right now is I would skip him from the rotation. He would not make his next start. The Mets have 6 starters, but they also have an off day coming up on Thursday. They don't necessarily need to maintain a 6-man rotation if they don't want to. But what I would do is I would skip Kodai Senga, and then I'd reevaluate based on 2 things. A, the way the rest of my rotation is throwing the baseball. And B, and this is where you got to trust Jeremy Hefner, what they are seeing on side sessions, what they're seeing when he throws bullpens. And if they don't like what they're seeing or the rotation comes into focus and does well, Tong has a good second start, McClain continues to dominate, Peterson bounces back, even Clay Holmes gives you a quality outing. If all of that happens, then you can't reinsert him into the rotation. You just can't. Hey, can he be an option out of the bullpen? What kind of role could he have out of the bullpen? But the good news right now as a Met fan is they've got a lot of options. I know that sounds crazy when you're coming off a rotation sequence in which basically everybody was terrible. I mean, after Nolan McClain, this Met rotation this past week has been, let's go through it, 4 2/3, 5 runs, 2 innings, 8 runs. Obviously, Tong had his 5-inning, 4-run, 1-earned performance. Holmes had 5 innings, 4 runs, 2 earned. That's the turnaround after Nolan McClain. You go before that, too. Sean Manaea, 4 2/3 innings, 2 runs. So you're not getting competitive starts from anybody, but they have options. Tyler McGill is on his way back. I know everyone doesn't love him, but he's another arm. And certainly Brandon Sproat is earning that opportunity. And that opportunity's got to come because I don't want to waste any more time. There's only 25 games left in this season. Don't pull what they pulled a few years ago with Francisco Alvarez, where they finally call him up with 3-4 days to go. Brandon Sproat should be up here sooner rather than later so the Mets can evaluate him. So they can figure out, hey, could this guy make a start in the postseason? I know that sounds nuts, but is it? I mean, right now, if you're building a playoff rotation, you asked me this the other day, Pete. Yeah, Nolan McClain's in it. And at this point, Jonah Tong may be in it after 1 freaking start.
That's outrageous. And but I said the same thing, too. Because you can't trust anybody else. But the one thing I will say, I will disagree with you on Senga about this. I wouldn't skip him in the rotation. What I would do is I would make him the opener and have another pitcher, starting pitcher, ready to go to fill in the blanks, to fill in the other innings. And as soon as Senga, you literally are going to go batter by batter with Kodai Senga. And as far as he can take you, as soon as you get into a spot, all right, runner on. See you later, Senga. Thank you so much. End of story.
Interesting. I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to read this email to you in relation to an opener. It's from Jack who writes, hey, Rico B team. I'll admit I don't tune into every episode of the Rico Bronya, so perhaps my idea has already been floated out into the universe. Often in times of Mets peril, I tend to limit my Mets content so as to not impact my social or professional life. I wanted to read that first paragraph, Jack, because before I started doing sports talk radio, where, hey, it doesn't matter if your team wins or loses, you have to do it, I was the exact same way. Me and my dad, when we drove home from Shea Stadium after Met losses, we would listen to CBS FM. We'd listen to oldies music. When the Mets won, we'd listen to Mets Extra. We would never listen to Mets Extra if they lost. So I totally get it. Do you notice if the Ricos are more popular after wins or losses off? Have you noticed the trend?
Yeah. Usually after they get their asses smoked, they usually get
See, that's usually how it goes.
That doesn't compute with Jack, who was like I was before I got into sports talk radio, which is I don't want to hear the negative content because it makes me more angry. Not that I'm trying to like make believe it didn't happen. Just when I hear it, it gets me pissed off. But anyhow, Jack had an idea around an opener. He writes, Evan, I might have found the solution for Ryan Helsley. Now, it might be so dumb, it's brilliant. We have a number of starting pitchers who have experience coming out of the bullpen. Clay Holmes, Sean Manaea, Tyler McGill, David Peterson. The list shockingly goes on. I'd like to see Mendoza go with Helsley as the opener for one of those games against Miami. Obviously, this was before the series began. I'm not sure how early teams need to submit their lineups, but wait until the final minute and throw Helsley in there to start the game. Give him a heads up, of course. I don't think he's ever started a game in the MLB, but I believe he was a starter at one point in his minor league career. I'd rather see him give up three home runs in the first inning as opposed to the sixth, seventh, or eighth. With the sudden signs of resilience the lineup has been showing, maybe starting the game with 102 up out of the gate might be the strategy that gets this guy going. I have to admit, I don't hate that idea. The idea around Kodai Senga, I mean, I don't like that either, Hoff, because remember they tried that in the postseason. And the reality is if Kodai Senga has a good first inning, you're going to want him to pitch a second inning. If he has a good second inning, he's going to want to pitch a third inning, and you're going to want him to pitch a third inning. So I don't think opening Kodai Senga changes anything, but I do think opening with Ryan Helsley is a worthy idea because, A, his stuff does play. He's nasty. He's just right now predictable. But maybe getting three quick outs to start a game, the pressure is kind of off. I know you could set the tone negatively by giving up a couple of runs, but in general, it is the first inning. And then what I've also noticed in this opener era is that let's say Manaea comes in next. Let's say you do this upcoming week, okay, in Detroit. You start Ryan Helsley. Here comes Manaea. Helsley gives you scoreless innings. When Manaea only gives you four, it feels better because it's actually an inning later into the game. So it has played mental tricks with me when they've used openers. But I don't think Helsley's a bad idea. I think what you should do around Senga, and this is an option I wanted to get into deeper. The Mets have so many starters, and we've talked about this before, tag team them. So when Senga starts a game and gets into trouble in the fourth inning, much like Brandon Waddell came in to clean up the mess, you have another starting pitcher on his back. And they could afford to do that. They have six guys in their rotation right now. Sproul would be a seventh. McGill would be an eighth. You could tag team starting pitchers and actually cut down a game and save your bullpen.
Yeah, but today, Senga couldn't do that even. Senga was so
earlier off. No, but you could take him out earlier when you know you have another guy right behind him. He didn't want to take him out because he's not in a rush to go to Brandon Waddell.
Yeah, well, no, I get that. But, I mean, really? Maybe he should have. By the way, the other thing, too, is if you start Helsley in the first inning and then Manaea goes four and you're winning and you get out of the, you know, you're five innings deep and you're up a run, you know that you at least don't have to get Ryan Helsley in the later parts of the game. So that's another positive, right? You don't have to worry that Ryan Helsley is going to blow the game for you.
It's a positive right out of there. Yes, absolutely. Let's get to some of your emails. TheRicoB@gmail.com. We'll name our Rico. I'm the man now, star of the series. We've already announced the net negative. I'm sorry. It's David Peterson. And comments by Juan Soto the other day were weird. Okay, they were very, very weird. We'll read you those comments coming up. Andy writes, Evan, stop freaking out. The team's four games up. You're such a whiner. You should smile more. Okay, Andy. This is for you. I'm smiling. I think I started the podcast by reminding people the Mets are four games up and that they will make the postseason. The division is over, which I think is pretty obvious, and that the final month of the season, assuming this isn't a full-fledged collapse, and I don't think it will be as badly as they've played, is really about finding out who should start in the playoffs and who's going to be in the rotation and who's going to be in the roster. So I'm not worried about a playoff spot, but no, it's okay to be frustrated by losing three out of four to the Miami Marlins. Charlie writes, this team stinks. Hey, Evan, I have two ideas that maybe Mendy could use because we know he listens to every episode. That is true. Idea number one is not using Marte to pinch hit every single game. I get that he was on a hit streak, but let's face it, he's cooled down a lot. I don't need to watch him strike out on three pitches every game just to get pulled for the other catcher. I don't know exactly what the solution would be for this, but I'd argue that it might start making sense using Torrens the way he's been hitting recently. Let me attack that number one. So we talked about pinch hitting Marte for Torrens. In the situation that they were in that game, runner on third, less than two outs, Torrens putting the bat on the ball, I think that specific situation may have made sense to let Torrens hit. But in general, Marte's a much better hitter than Torrens. And if you're trailing in a game or if there are guys on late in a game, you're going to rather have Marte up than Torrens. And when you compare the other guys on your bench, which let's see who they had in that specific game, you have Hayden Senger, Tyrone Taylor, and Ronnie Mauricio. Mauricio is the interesting candidate, but he also strikes out a lot. And with a runner on third and less than two outs, I don't know. I don't think Mauricio would have been your best option. And they're calling up Luis Angel Acuna, which is obvious, as a September 1st call-up. He's not much of a hitter either. Like, he's not going to be there to be a pinch hitter off the bench. He's there for his speed off the bench, his versatility off the bench. So I slightly disagree. On days where Marte doesn't play, he is their best bat off the bench. The good news is Alvarez played another rehab game and may be on his way back. And if Alvarez is back, and hopefully he can perform because he is going to be dealing with this thumb and pinky issue he's got to play through, you're not pinch hitting. So the pinch hitting option goes away much more so when Alvarez is there. The other reason why pinch hitting Marte for Torrens may not have been the greatest is because later in the game when Cedric Mullins came up in the ninth inning as the tying run, wouldn't you rather have Marte up than Cedric Mullins? Or, but I mean, I guess it goes five different ways, because if you don't use Marte then, you're probably using him the batter before to extend the game. And Hayden Senger got a base hit, which none of us would have predicted. But I did kind of bemoan when Mullins came up as the tying run. Like, man, I wish Marte had a chance to come up and tie the game in that spot. I even thought about Ronnie Mauricio, because Mullins hasn't hit since he's been here. And Mauricio's at least had his moments, the big home run he hit in San Diego, the big home run in San Francisco. So it was a brief thought of using Mauricio for Mullins in Saturday's game as the tying run in the bottom of the ninth inning. But they basically put Mauricio on mothballs. I mean, he's on the team, but he never plays.
What's the point of having him up here right now? Like, I mean, it's like, I don't want to say, oh, it's stunting his growth, but like, maybe it's good to be around the team, but they're not using him.
Who do you want? All. Who do you want up here? Because Acuna's up here now anyway, so that argument's dead. So who else do you want? Joey Meneses?
Actually, yeah, let's go. I'll take Joey. You got some pop in that bat. I'd love to see what he could do.
The other idea from Charlie in the email was, idea number two, which is way less plausible, is to either send Senga to the minors, the bullpen, or DFA him. Not DFAing him. Stop with that. And then combine Devenski and Waddell and let them get three innings each every 6 days. I'm not even going to finish this part of the email, Charlie. I hate every part of that idea. Chris Devenski and Brandon Waddell have done a fine job, but they're not guys you actually want to, you know, plan on putting out there. That would not be my idea. But Doug in L.A. follows up the tag team idea with this. Our two biggest weaknesses at the moment are starting pitching length and unreliable bullpen. What if come playoff time we pitch combos? And here are his combos. Senga and Manaea, that's tag team number one. Holmes and McGill, tag team number two. And then McLean, Peterson, and Tong are their own men. Senga, Manaea, and Holmes would be pressed to get out of the fourth inning anyway. So what if we pitch them till four? Obviously, if somebody is cooking, we keep them in. But this philosophy would extend our starters then have less reliability and otherwise unreliable bullpen. I think once rosters expand, which have now occurred, you can bring up McGill, you can bring up Sproat, all right? You can easily make room for them because, A, there's an extra spot for one of them, and then the other spot is replacing Brandon Waddell. So I have very easily added McGill and Sproat to this team. No big deal. This now gives you eight starting pitchers. Now, you would have a seven-man bullpen or a six-man bullpen, so you're a little bit short. I guess that's the one issue. But you're not going to need as many relievers if you've got eight starting pitchers with four of them being back-ended on a tag team. And sometimes you don't need the tag team and that guy's available for other days. Does that make sense?
It does. And here's the thing.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Shop Blinds.com Labor Day Mega Sale, happening now. Save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free measure. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
First of all, I said this in the beginning of the season that they should be doing this because they don't have starting pitchers. They have openers. They have extended openers, glorified openers. But that being said, though, do you think this has been David Stern's strategy the whole time? Is like, I know the way that baseball is going and these starting pitchers, we're never really going to get the length that we want out of it. No. So let's just do this. We're gonna tag team people together. Screw it. Hulk Hogan and Macho Man, you're going up against LOD today. You know, I don't know.
I don't think it was his strategy from the beginning, but I think the way this season is going, just based on the positive of them having that many good options, because that is a positive, combined with the bullpen not being effective, combined with starters not being able to go deep into games, and now with the rosters expanding, so you've got 14 pitchers on your roster as compared to 13, I think it's just the best scenario given the pieces that they have. So I don't think it's something you plan. I just think the way the Mets are being made up right now, where they could conceivably have 14 pitchers and eight of them are pseudo starting pitchers, because I just laid it out. It's very easy. Brandon Sproat gets added as the extra man. Tylor Megill, once he's ready, he just made a rehab start, so it'd probably be a few days for him. Tylor Megill gets added for Brandon Waddell. And boom, there you go. I just solved it. Very simple.
Can I bring up something that's been on my mind? It's not really about this, but in general. So Friday night, it was, you know, you didn't want to use your bullpen because game's a blowout. You bring in Luis Torrens, things get out of hand, it takes forever, and you go to Ryan Stanek. Do you think that almost like they have an emergency quarterback in football, do you think they'd ever have an emergency like relief pitcher? You can have them not really on the roster, but you can have them around all week, and every week they change it up. But like just in case that moment, so you don't have to go to a position player.
It's not a bad idea. I don't know how you'd write the rule out, but basically you have a taxi squad anyway. So it's a 27th man that's a break glass in case of emergency. Actually, I think I know the way I'd write the rule. You can't use a position player whenever you want. Like it used to be the case where you could use a position player to pitch whenever you wanted. And now there are specific rules in terms of what the score is, in terms of what inning it is. Like if the game somehow went 14 innings, they would then allow you to do that. So I think if it followed certain criteria, like it's a 10-run game, because you wouldn't want teams abusing that. It's a 10-run game. You can break glass and go to the emergency reliever as a 27th guy. It would make sense. And I do think that's something MLB should consider because, and you touched on this when we did the Rico on Friday night, episode number 539. The reason Met fans were so angry at the Torrens stuff was that it was fireworks night and people were hanging out through a long 3-hour game that was clearly over. And the last inning became a farcical mess. You had two position players on the mound throwing 58 miles per hour.
There was 10 runs scored? It was ridiculous.
I'm not even kidding you. There was a guy sitting next to me because I stayed the whole night. My son wanted to watch the fireworks. I wasn't going to leave early anyway. You know how I am. But there was a guy who was so disgusted after one of the hits Torrens gave up. He got up and said, "This isn't baseball." And he laughed. Like he walked out of the game like it was a bad movie in a movie theater. So he wasn't the only one. I do want to clear this up. Danny writes the email. Does Brandon Sproat needed to be added to the roster before September 1st to be available for the postseason? At this point, I think it's malpractice to leave him at AAA through today, if so. The rules are you need to be on the 40-man roster before September 1st. Brandon Sproat wasn't on the 40-man roster, but he recently got added. I think on August 31st, David Stearns made the clerical move to get him on the 40-man. But as long as you're on the 40-man roster, you could be in a playoff roster. So Brandon Sproat is absolutely eligible. And I do think he's going to get called up. I've been saying it for a while. The question is when, and the question is what's his role? I mean, right now the Mets are about to begin a 3-game series in Detroit where I think it's pretty straightforward that it's going to be Sean Manaea, Nolan McLean, and Clay Holmes. Then they have an off day. The off day allows them to reset and do many different things with their rotation. Jonah Tong's day is Friday night against Cincinnati, a full week off. They could skip him and go to David Peterson, and Peterson would still be on an extra day of rest if he makes that start Friday night in Cincinnati. But if they keep everybody on their day, it is Tong, Peterson, and then Senga Sunday afternoon against Cincinnati. Again, they can skip Kodai Senga very easily because they have a 6-man rotation and because they have the off day. And then it would be Manaea, McLean, Holmes. It just continues. So there are a lot of ways they can kind of move this thing around if they want Sproat to make his major league debut. But I look at the schedule and I say, all right, where's the soft landing spot for him? Believe it or not, is the soft landing spot Cincinnati? They are a 500 team, but they are a 500 team that's right on the Mets' tuchuses right now. So we'll keep an eye on how they want to handle this. Jonah Tong is clearly deserving of another start. I don't think he was brilliant on Friday. It was also really tough to judge. Honestly, I think what made the Tong start tough to judge is that they gave him a 12-0 lead. And I'm not complaining about it. Jonah Tong's not complaining about it. But it was very weird in terms of trying to figure out how he pitched when he was pitching with an ungodly lead of 12-0. Now, let me get to Juan Soto. I don't want to make a big deal of this because I really don't have a big deal to be made. It was more, I read something. It jumped out at me. I thought it was very strange. I'm not one to write fan fiction about what the hell is happening in the Met locker room. I just want to read this to you, and then you guys tell me if there's something weird about it. So Francisco Lindor has been regarded as the captain of the team. We all kind of feel that way. There were rumors about the Mets naming him the captain of the team. Juan Soto said this to Mike Puma about Starling Marte. He's literally the leader of the team. I feel like he's actually the captain of this team, Soto told the Post. He's bringing everybody together. He's bringing the energy that we need. He's a guy who has been stepping up every single time. It doesn't matter what. He's actually the real deal of the team. He's the model of the team. Everybody, when they want to talk and get to know something or have a conversation, they can go to him. He's actually the real deal. Why does that feel like a shot at Lindor? And again, I'm not saying, I don't know what their relationship is. They could be best friends. I have no idea. But I read that quote the other day, and I forgot to bring it up on the last Rico. It made me pause just for a second. And I was like, that is weird. Like, that felt as if he was going out of his way to rip Lindor, and I don't know why. Again, they could be best friends. Maybe it's a joke. I mean, maybe Juan's like, yeah, you know what I'm going to do, Francisco? You know what part of the quote is weird to me? He's actually the real deal. As if he's telling everybody, hey, he's the real deal, actually. Not the guy who you think is the real deal. Am I crazy? I'm not one to cause drama, Hoff, but that was a weird quote by Juan Soto about Starling Marte that felt like he was taking a shot at Lindor for some reason.
Yeah, I read that quote and I tried to just ignore it as best as possible because I'm like, they don't need more nonsense. It is strange that he'd go out of his way to say that about Marte, and it did feel like a shot at Lindor. I will not disagree with you on that. There's nothing I could say.
I think there's a way where you can put over Marte without it sounding like that. I think he's actually the real deal is the part that jumped out at me, as if he was saying what all you guys think is not the real deal. So, I don't know, file it away in the back of your minds. It was just a very strange quote. Not about Marte. The Marte part's great. Like, Starling Marte, you could tell, probably is a great leader in that room. So, don't take it as, I don't believe Marte deserves that kind of compliment. I remember hearing earlier this season, it was written about that Marte was the one that got the Soto and said, hey, when we hit home runs, you pose for that picture. So I think there are absolute attributes of Marte that make him a fantastic leader. I'm not disputing that part. It was just the way it was worded and the way it was said felt like it was a shot at Lindor, but hopefully it's nothing and I'm just reading into it.
Well, let me ask you a question, okay? Because now you read into it, so now I have to read into it.
Okay.
How much does it mean for Lindor to be the captain? Like, there's been a lot of talk about him being the captain of the team and happened beforehand. And with Soto coming over, making a lot of money, it feels like the captain talk really happened once Soto was guaranteed to be here. And it's like, Lindor's the captain, though, by the way. Lindor's the captain. Do you think it's a big deal for Lindor to have that C on his chest?
Seems like he would enjoy it. I don't know if it's a big deal. I mean, I think it's a great compliment to be named the captain of a team. And it doesn't really matter. I went back earlier this season. We were talking about how it doesn't matter to be a captain. It doesn't even matter if there's a rivalry amongst captains. Because now it's been many, many years, so we don't talk about it. But I had heard for a long time. My dad used to tell me the stories all the time. Keith Hernandez and Gary Carter did not like each other. Now, Keith will say great things about him now. Gary is no longer with us. A lot of time has gone by. They were both captains. Keith was the captain, and then Gary got jealous, and they named Gary the captain. Like, this is stuff that we've all heard. So even if there is a rivalry or factions in the locker room, it ain't a big deal. It doesn't derail a team usually. It didn't derail the 86 Mets, and trust me, Keith and Gary didn't exactly love each other. So I don't know what Lindor wants. If being the C or having the C on his jersey is that big of a deal. And I'm not even saying this is a big deal right now. Just something that caught my eye. But I know what's a big deal to you, Pete Hoffman. Walker Buehler signing with the Philadelphia Phillies after he was cut by the Red Sox. You wanted him. Mets didn't get him. Are you even more pissed that he's a Philadelphia Philly now?
Oh, my God, yeah. That's the worst part about it. Like, he could have gone to the Boston – well, obviously, he couldn't go to Boston Red Sox. He could have gone to the Yankees. He could have gone to the Yankees, the Tigers, the Dodgers, whatever. The Phillies. I mean, it's everything that, like, what do we do? Why are we sleeping behind the wheel right now? What are we doing? Like, you are having an issue with your starting pitching, with your bullpen. There's a guy that I understand has not had a good season, but maybe a change of location could help. And by the way, didn't he make the last out of the World Series last year?
Well,
hasn't he had the experience?
So Walker Buehler, if the Mets had signed him to a minor league deal and moved him to the bullpen, I'm all for. I don't want Walker Buehler making starts. The Mets have right now 8 starting pitchers. A few of them, in fact, most of them, I'd still prefer over Walker Buehler in this moment. In terms of pitching out of the bullpen, sure, he did a good job of that in the World Series. We talked about how he came out of the bullpen against the Yankees even recently in that Sunday night game and pitched decently for a while. But remember, the Phillies signed him to a minor league deal, and he's making starts for the Phillies. So I think the Phillies view Buehler a little bit differently than the way the Mets would have, because if I'm the Mets, I'm not signing him to make any starts. Not with Brandon Sproat on his way up. Sorry, not happening. And as down as you may be on Kodai Senga or Clay Holmes, check out what Buehler's done this season. You know, it's not like he was lighting it up. There's a reason why a playoff-bound Red Sox team caught him. So I would have been interested in the right circumstances. And the right circumstances to me are not what the Phillies are doing, because it does look like the Phillies are going to add him to the rotation. Do you not agree with that?
No, I get that what the Phillies are doing, but I don't 100% agree right now, because how bad Senga's been, how bad Manaea's been, Peterson's been looking terrible lately, and then we're going to get McGill back soon, which we never know what he does. I mean, we never know what type of pitcher Trevor McGill is. Tyler can either go six, seven innings and go give up zeros, or go 2 or 3 like Senga does. I mean, you just never know.
But what about Buehler? I mean, there's a reason he was released. He's not having a great year.
I understand, but let me put it this way. If the Phillies are going to give him a chance, you don't think the Mets should? Like, who are the Mets right now to be like, oh, we have a great pitching staff?
Well, the Philly rotation has major questions right now because Zach Wheeler's out for the season. The Mets don't have
it. Everything's a weird question.
No, hold on. The Met rotation has not been good, obviously. Their last turnaround has been awful. They also have 8 different options for their rotation right now. And we could sit here and argue about who should start. A lot of people right now want Brandon Sproat in the rotation. I agree with you. The only debate's going to be, who's he replacing? But I was about to call him Clay Buchholz. For some reason, now when I look at Walker Buehler, I think of Clay Buchholz, the former Red Sox.
It's a tight starter pants.
Who was good for a while, then he fell apart, all that. Like, he's not replacing anybody in the rotation. He would have been a bullpen arm. He would have been an intriguing bullpen arm, but not for this rotation.
Evan, hold on a second. We're sitting here talking right now about the rotation in the playoffs, right? We're sitting here going, who's going to start the games? Who's going to start the games? We're like, Nolan McClain, maybe Jonah Tong, and I don't know if that. We're talking about Jonah Tong. He started one game in the season. Wasn't even all that great. Yeah, but we're considering him because the rest of the rotation has been awful lately.
Your appeal to Walker Buehler is basically the old saying of one man's trash is another man's gold. Like, you're just so sick of looking at the guys in our rotation that you'll take the trash of another rotation and say, sure, why the hell not? And under the right circumstances, which to me was coming out of the bullpen, sure, why not? But not to be in the rotation. I don't think signing Walker Buehler would have knocked one out of the ballpark. But if you want to knock one out of the ballpark and raise the apple with Takara Chuhai, you can. It's a sparkling cocktail that blends real shochu spirits with the delicious flavors of fruits locally grown in Japan, available at Citi Field and Fuji Apple, of course, white peach and lemon. Earlier in the Rico Bronya, we announced that David Peterson is the net negative for the second time this season. In terms of the I'm the man now star of the series, I think we have a few options. Okay. Option number one, we could reward Chris Devensky. I mean, the guy came into a horrible situation with his team down 8-2 and threw 3 scoreless innings to keep the Mets alive and gave the Met offense a golden opportunity to make this incredible comeback. It wasn't his fault that Tyler Rogers gave up the lead run. It wasn't his fault the Met offense couldn't complete it. So I think Chris Devensky is absolutely a worthy candidate. Brandon Waddell did the same thing. Came in, cleaned up a mess. Pitched 4 1/3 scoreless innings. Wonderful effort by Waddell. Now, Waddell and Devensky have something in common. We're giving them honorable mention for a Rico, I'm the man now star of the series. and their reward was getting sent down.
So
they both have that going for them. Offensively, you have Francisco Lindor. He went 6-for-17 with a home run. You've got Brandon Nimmo, who went 7-for-16 with a couple of home runs and 6 RBIs. Mark Vientos hit 2 home runs in this series. Up until the finale, Pete Alonso was a great candidate. He went 0-for-4 in the finale of this series. But overall in this series, he went 7-for-19 with 2 home runs. You got Jonathan. It's tough to give it to Jonathan. They were up 12-0. Like, it didn't. He was okay. He went 5 innings, which feels like a lot because all the Mets starters go less than that. So, honorable mention to Jonathan. To me, the winner is Juan Soto. I thought Juan Soto had a wonderful series. He hit 3 home runs, should have hit a 4th. The wind knocked it down in the finale. We mentioned earlier, he almost had his Met moment with the game-tying home run in the 6th inning of game number 3 to make it 8-8 before Tyler Rogers gave up a run. But overall, in this 4-game series, Juan Soto went 5-for-13 with 3 home runs and 5 RBIs. He stole 2 bases, but he was on base 10 times in 18 plate appearances. See, he was on base at an incredible, incredible hit. Hit the 3 home runs, hit the big home run. I think Juan Soto is the Rico, I'm the man now star of the series. Do you agree, disagree with Soto being the guy?
I mean, I want to put him up there, obviously. He had a great series. Nimmo would have gotten it, I think, too, because he did have a good – he had a great series.
He had a great series offensively.
No.
That miscue, though, really pissed me off, man.
I was just about to say, like, I mean, way to just find – because I didn't watch the game live yesterday, so I actually went this morning to watch it, and that pissed me more off more than else because David Peterson may have had a rough inning, you know, a lot of contact. He did screw up the beginning of the game as well, but there were so many opportunities the Mets to not give up more runs, and right there was a key one, and Brandon Nimmo just crapped the bed again.
Yeah, and I don't want to just pick on Nimmo because we have gained the reputation as guys that want to pick on Nimmo. It really should just be you. I like Brandon Nimmo. I have nothing against him. The same could be said for Alonso. And we mentioned this on our last Rico Bronya. He had gotten off to a great start in the series because at that point, through the first 2 games, he was 5-for-10 with a home run, 2 home runs and 4 RBIs. And I said, yeah, he's off to a great start, but his defense really killed him on Friday night. Or Thursday night, I think it was. I get the games confused. Game 1, he made 2 horrendous plays. So defense can hurt you a little bit. But Nimmo hit. I mean, honestly, the Mets had a lot of guys who hit. You know, when you go out and you scored 19 runs in one game, 8 runs in another game, there's a lot of offense on the table. So it was a good series by Nimmo offensively. It was a good series by Lindor. Vientos hit 2 more home runs. Like, there was a lot of offense. I just think Soto, from a consistency standpoint, from getting on base, giving him credit for that really clutch 2-run home run that could have been a bigger moment. I think it's Juan Soto, and it's the first Rico, I'm the man now star of the series for Juan since the Atlanta 4-game split back before the All-Star break. So he hasn't won one of these in a while. It's his 4th, though. Congratulations to Juan Soto, his 4th award. So only 2 Mets have won the award more than him. Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor. We mentioned David Peterson's the net negative. I do want to give a lot of honorable mentions. Number 1, Gregory Soto, cost him in game 1. Number 2, Tyler Rogers, cost him in game 3. Number 4, Kodai Senga for crapping the bed in game 4. So a lot of great candidates, but I'm sorry. 2 innings, 8 runs. That takes the cake. David Peterson, the net negative of this 4-game series loss to the Miami Marlins.
I would like to put Cedric Mullins up there, too, because he went 0-for at the plate.
He did. Yeah, Cedric Mullins, how'd he do overall? Let me see.
0-for-13, 0 runs, 1 RBI at the end of the
He was 0-for-13 in this series. Is that true?
Yeah. He sucks, dude. God. Why is he getting that many plate appearances?
Yeah, well, I think that's got to change, unfortunately. And I thought that Mendy was showing signs of that in the Philly series when he didn't play. He didn't play him for the first 3 games of that. They got to go back to that. I do think that we have to head back. Going to Detroit, I know they're facing a bunch of righties, but Cedric Mullins cannot be guaranteed at-bats. I apologize for not mentioning him as an honorable mention. 0 for 13 slipped my brain.
Well, so here's the difference. I don't know if you realize this. So he got 13 plate appearances. He also walked twice. Starling Marte only batted eight times because he did walk as well. He had eight at-bats where Mullins got 13. So that's I guess, where they replaced them. They replaced Marte and played Mullins more?
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell?
Yeah. No, and there's a few ways you can do this. Tyrone Taylor's played a lot better, so strictly Tyrone Taylor could play center field. You could DH Marte, play Vientos at third, Beatty at second, and McNeil in center. I think those are your two options. Now, Luis Angel Acuna comes up here. I don't think he's a guy that's going to play a lot. And you mentioned Ronnie Mauricio has barely played. You could give him an at-bat, though, and see what happens. Looking ahead, they face Charlie Morton in the opener of the series. I just want to make sure there are no crazy career numbers that could affect things. Cedric Mullins is 1 for 5 in his career against Charlie Morton. How about Juan Soto's numbers against Charlie Morton? You ready for this? 8 for 14 with 3 home runs and 8 walks. That's a 571 batting average. He isn't the only one. Mark Vientos, 5 for 7 with a home run against Charlie Morton. So I don't know how much that means. Marte's got horrible career numbers against Morton, so that could lead to him not playing. 5 for 27, which is a 185 batting average. But I'm with you. I'm moving away from Cedric Mullins. I thought Mendy moved away from him in the Philly series with the way he didn't play him.
This was such a bad move, such a bad trade. Like I said this from the beginning, like he wasn't that much of an upgrade. Legitimately, I don't know what they were seeing. And they traded 12 prospects. 12 prospects for 4 guys that basically haven't worked yet.
Yeah, the trade deadline so far, and luckily there's a month to go in the regular season, and then, of course, the playoffs are brand new script. The trade deadline's been a freaking disaster. I mean, we just have to call it like it is. Soto was good for a while. He has struggled. Tyler Rogers has been a disappointment. Ryan Helsley has been hell. And Cedric Mullins has been Cedric Mullins. The hope was he'd come here, pennant race, rejuvenated, contract year, and boom, he'd get hot. None of that has happened, unfortunately. But here's the beautiful thing. Things can change on a dime. And that is certainly what the Mets are hoping for. I do have a bet for Monday afternoon's Labor Day game. This pick segment is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. I mentioned Juan Soto's career numbers against Charlie Morton. Juan Soto is making it very clear. He wants to steal bases. He stole 2 bases in game 3 of the series, and then went out of his way in Sunday's game to make sure he got a meaningless stolen base in the 6th inning with the team trailing 5-0. What Juan Soto is telling you is he wants 30-30. He may even be thinking about 40-40 at this point with his aggressiveness on the base paths. So I assume, A, he'll get on base against Charlie Morton because he's on a good clip recently and has great career numbers against Charlie. And I expect he's going to run on him. So plus 550 at FanDuel for a Juan Soto anytime stolen base. I would very confidently put a few shekels on that because right now Juan Soto is on a stolen base mission. Once again, that was the pick segment brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. All right, let's take a look at this pennant race. So the NL East is done, if we're being honest. The Phillies did lose the finale of their series against Atlanta. So the Mets are 6 games back. They do have the 4 head-to-head games. So certainly they could go to Philadelphia and win all 4. But knowing the Mets, they would do that and then go get swept over the weekend. And so it wouldn't matter. But they're 6 back in the NL East, and they're 4 up on Cincinnati in the National League Central. In the 3rd wild card spot. They've got 3 games against Cincinnati coming up over the weekend. The Mets right now trail the season series 2-1. If they win 2 out of 3 against the Reds, this thing is done. Because not only would they add a game to their lead, whatever it is, going into the weekend, that should essentially wrap up the tiebreaker. Because even though they would split the season series, the next tiebreaker is record against your own division. Currently, the New York Mets are 23-19 against their division. The Reds are 17-22 against theirs. So it's not a huge lead by any stretch, but it's a lead in terms of the second tiebreaker. The other team you got to keep an eye on is San Francisco, who's now climbed to five games out at 68-69. Even Arizona is 68-70. And St. Louis is 68-70. And remember, the Cardinals have the tiebreaker on the Mets. Wait, do they? They won three out of four. I got to confirm. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they do, if memory serves correct, on St. Louis. Let me double check that real quick. But I'm like 90% sure. Yeah, the Mets lost two out of three in St. Louis. No, they swept them. They got the tiebreaker on the Cardinals. I'm wrong. I forgot. They swept them at home 4-0 and then lost two out of three. So the Mets have the tiebreaker on St. Louis. They have the tiebreaker on San Francisco. The Diamondbacks, they split with. So again, it reverts back to divisional record. Arizona right now is 22-18 against their division. Mets are 23-19. So they're basically tied. And I don't even know what the third tiebreaker is. So it's depressing that I've even got to get into this kind of stuff. But that's where we are. And thank you to the Cincinnati Reds for, in their own right, crapping the bet. Because if the Reds played a little bit better, the Mets would not be in this relatively comfortable spot of having a four-game lead. Obviously, it's right in front of them over the weekend. I mean, Cincinnati sweeps us. We're going to be having a very different discussion on that Sunday night, Rico. But if the Mets can win that series, you certainly feel like they could put that to bed. And then you could focus on the wild card series, who should be in the rotation, and then, of course, who they should face. If the season ended today, it would be Mets-Dodgers in the wild card series. And if you beat them, it'd be the Philadelphia Phillies. And the new game I want to play, and we'll start it today, at the end of every series, we will declare our playoff rotation for the wild card series. Now, instead of getting into the weeds of the order, it's just the three guys who would start the wild card series. Okay? That's our new game because it may change after every series. So I will go first, Pete, because mine's already changed because you asked me this a few days ago in the first unofficial start to this. My answer at the time was Nolan McLean, David Peterson, and Kodai Senga. I will now tell you it is Nolan McLean, David Peterson, and Shaw Manaea. Those are my three guys. And I think in the case of Manaea, I would have Clay Holmes or someone ready to clean up the mess after three or four innings, and I would use Jonah Tong out of the bullpen. Obviously, card subject to change. Tong has only made one start. So today, in the debut of what's your rotation if the playoffs started today, my answer is McLean, Manaea, and Peterson. Hoff, your turn.
Oh, this is so tough right now. McLean is obviously in there. I'm going to say that Tong is going to pitch well enough that he gets the start. An opener is not real. You can't do an opener, right?
I mean, you could do whatever the hell you want. If the playoffs start today, what are you doing?
So then I'm doing an opener. One of those games is an opener.
Opener with who? And who's your bulk guy? Like, you going to give me any information besides opener?
Brooks Raley.
And then who's coming in next? Who's pitching the second inning?
Freaking Chris Davinsky or Brandon Waddle?
Oh, come
Waddell. No.
Come on.
Honestly, I this is so tough. I mean, you're just going to have to go inning by inning with new pitchers. I'm gonna go inning. Once somebody looks like they're about to lose it, you bring the next guy in, and it's gonna, you're all hands on deck.
I am writing this down because I want to check in on this after every series to see how things change. So after, I'll label this after the Marlins series, all right? After the Marlins series, Rico, Evan went McLean, Manaea, Peterson. Hoff went McLean, Tong, opener, parentheses, inning by inning.
Bullpen game, yeah.
I just wanted to make that clear. One last thing. Pete Hoffman, it is now official. You and I will be having a Rico Bronya Civil War in the first round of the fantasy baseball playoffs. I choked my division away, which means I don't have a first round bye. It is Hoff versus me in the playoffs. Are you confident you're going to knock me off and advance to the semifinals?
I'm the defending champion. I won it all last year.
You are the defending champion.
I won it all last year. I made a lot of moves, and a lot of moves were Mets-based. I picked up Sean Manaea. I picked up Tyler Rogers. I picked up Brian Helsley. And my season has gone shitty since the trade deadline. So I'm getting rid of all those guys. I think that I'm going to – whoever I pick up in the free agency is going to be better, and I'm ready to take you down, my friend.
So I did want to clarify, going into this, Hoffman has one New York Met on his roster, and that is Tyler Rogers. So all those other guys you've gotten rid of. So you have Rogers, Tyler Rogers.
He's going to be gone tonight. He's going to be gone tomorrow.
Oh, is he?
Oh, yeah, he's out. Screw him.
For the record, I have Brandon Nimmo. I have Jet Williams, but he's in the minor leagues. He's one of my quote-unquote NA guys. I have David Peterson now. I have Edwin Diaz, and I have Reed Garrett on the IL. So,
are you starting Peterson this week?
He's not scheduled to start until Friday or Saturday in Cincinnati. Let's play it by ear. I got to see where I am in our matchup before I decide if I'm starting David Peterson.
Oh, by the way, I also dropped a former Met, Seth Lugo, because he's been sucking ass lately too.
Wow. Maybe I should just sign him too.
Take him. Go for it. Please.
My fantasy baseball season was the 2022 Mets. I had a great year. I collapsed at the end of the regular season. And now I'm hoping, well, if I get hot in the playoffs, who cares? I got a spoiler alert. It's good news for Hoffman. I'm not going to get hot in the playoffs. I'm going to get knocked out by Pete. And my fantasy year will be like the 2022 New York Mets. That is my prediction.
If that's the case, good for me, but I don't think I'm going to be having a good week either. So I think it's a toss up between who's going to suck more.
We shall see. Well, we appreciate everybody listening and downloading the Rico Bro. And you can always email us the RicoB@gmail.com, the RicoB@gmail.com. Of course, we'll have a Rico Bro after the Detroit series coming up. They actually play a Monday afternoon game on Labor Day, a Tuesday night game, and then a Wednesday afternoon game, midweek afternoon game. So our Rico will be at some point on Wednesday night. And then, of course, the big weekend against Cincinnati, Mets-Reds. Let's hope. I'm hoping because Cincinnati is about to play Toronto. So they don't exactly have the easiest schedule in the world. Mets are taking on Detroit. Cincy's taking on Toronto. I would love to pick up one more game before that weekend begins. You go in there with a five-game lead. There's that cushion of, all right, worst-case scenario, sweep. We still have a two-game lead, so we'll see if the Mets can do it. Tigers are tough, obviously. Reds and Blue Jays, who knows what will happen. But that's my goal going into what can be a very significant Mets-Reds series. Thank you very much for listening, hanging out, chilling with us on another brand-new edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave. Welcome to the club.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Shop Blinds.com Labor Day Mega Sale, happening now. Save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free measure. Rules and restrictions may apply.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.